Emotions make work better or worse. And when people feel good, they perform well. If they don't feel good, they don't perform well.
TTYA Talks, the podcast. This episode is brought to you by Chivas Regal, I Rise, We Rise, a mindset that unites creatives, pioneers, and visionaries to define their own journey to success. Live and direct from Lagos, Nigeria.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to TTYA Talks Live. So welcome, guys. I started TTYA Talks, the podcast, as a safe space to inspire, motivate, and allow you to listen to real, authentic career lifestyle stories of women who are pioneering in the creative industries and sports. Since launching TTYA 10 years ago, I've always strived to use my platform to galvanize communities. TTYA started as a fashion brand, focusing on addressing the gap in the market for tall women. And it's really kind of morphed into a lifestyle brand, which encompasses the podcast, workshops, events. And my mission has always been to create a more equitable space through connection, information, and network. So I'm proud to be with people here today who have really supported me over the years, empowered me, but also given me the tools and the knowledge that I needed. So as creative entrepreneurs, I think it's possible to have multiple revenue streams and explore several categories within the industries, sometimes at the same time. Our guests today are two powerhouses, a creative duo, Ronemi Ogulu, COO of Spaceship Collective and creative director, brand strategist for Burna Boy. And Nisi Ogulu is the founder, creative director of Creole Animation Studio and the co-CEO of Kemet Automotive. Guys, give it up for my sisters, Ronemi and Nisi. Welcome to TTYA Talks. How are you guys today? Nisi, give me a signal.
Good.
Ronemi?
Ba-ba-ba-ba.
So, Ronnie, I'm going to start with you. I'd love you to kind of share your journey into the music industry. And I guess this is going to pass on between the two of you because I feel like people see you where you are but don't necessarily appreciate and understand the journey. So let's take it back to the Port Harcourt days.
I think yes, we're actually cool. I feel like we had one of the best childhoods I can think of. We grew up in Port Harcourt. I always say we kind of grew up in like a social bubble. It was our parents and a group of like eight friends, and we used to kind of do everything. We had everything: skateboards, rollerblades, ice skating, everything, ballet, karate, taekwondo, and we were always busy. And I think our parents used to be the weird parents because it's like all the other parents would be like, "Bosse, why are your children doing that? Sam, why are you guys spending so much money? You don't even have all this money. How are you doing this?" And my mom was so sure. She was always sure, like, I want my kids to do this. I want them to speak languages. I want them to travel. I want them to be this. It's like she was clear. And my dad is like, I wanted to marry someone that was better than me. So whatever she says, I say. And that's kind of how we lived. And they always used to tell us we're the five famous five. And it was always, our case was different. I remember my mom telling us all the time, your case, it will always be different. Because sometimes we'll come back from our friends' houses and we're like, oh, you know when they used to do those dinners where it'll be like all parents and it's a Chinese restaurant. And then they would be like, the kids can only have one prawn each. And my brother's like, huh? One prawn? And so we get home and we're fuming. And my mom is like, you guys need to calm down. He's like, I eat prawns at home. Why would they tell me I can only have one prawn? And it wasn't like we were rich. We weren't rich. We were literally, I think they just knew what they wanted their kids to be. And I think that's kind of where we were. And we were a group of friends. That's how we grew up, as a group of five friends. So it's kind of manifested today as well in like how we interact and what our goals are. And I think the trust level as well with all of us across the board, it's just whatever venture. Nisi is the one that wakes up tomorrow and she'll say, I want to build a rocket ship. And we're all like, yeah, how much do you need? Let's get it. So yeah, that's kind of how it started.
And do you know why I love that? Because I think the more that I do these talks and the more kind of different diverse backgrounds that we have, it's so interesting because sometimes there is this stigma that your African parents kind of want you to go down that academic route of you have to be a lawyer, you have to be a doctor. And it's sometimes they can't really fathom. And I always tell this story of like when I launched TTYA in Selfridges, It was actually the first black owned brand to go into Selfridges, first of all. But I remember my mum not getting it until her pastor came, and her pastor came to Selfridges and was like, oh, wow, your daughter has a brand in Selfridges. This is a big deal. And then it's like all of a sudden it kind of dawned on her like, wow, this is a big deal. But I think from their perspective, they only knew like having an academic background equals success. And I think watching you guys and watching your family set up is so amazing to me, because it's almost like your parents empowered you to be who you want to be, not who they wanted you to be.
I think the main thing I've learned, I think over time and now looking back, our parents are just people. They're actually just figuring it out, and they cannot give you more than they have with regards to like what they've seen or what they've learned. And I think looking back on that, I kind of understand why my mom was the way she is. And like just by like living with her dad was, his friends used to call him a chimney. He was the biggest chain smoker in the whole city. He ended up helping Fela build Kalakuta, the shrine. He was outside. And, you know, sometimes now when she's upset at us and she calls him to be like, can you imagine these children? It's like, Bosse, you have no moral justification not to give your children what they want. He's like, I threw provisions over the fence to you in boarding school just so you would be fine. So whatever it is they need, go and figure out how they're going to get it. So, yeah, I think also just learning to give people grace as well, like our parents, and in how they came up and how they brought us up is a big thing that I've learned as well.
And Nissi, speak to us. One, I want you to tell the people how many languages you guys actually speak, because it mesmerizes me, especially when we're in Paris and you guys are like having your moment and I'm just staying in the corner like, si, oui. First of all, tell us how many languages you actually speak, and then we'll get into a little bit more about your career as well.
I mean, the real OG with the languages is my mom. She speaks 6. We're just learning. I speak 3, Yoruba, English, French. Same for Ronnie. Damn, he's just Yoruba and English. He's French. He didn't take it seriously in school.
And as a founder and creative director of an amazing animation studio and Kemet Automotive, those are 2 parallel jobs that are happening simultaneously at the same time. How did you get started in such diverse industries, and what inspired your entrepreneurial pursuits?
With Creel, it was more growing up Afropolitan and wanting to tell African stories. Moving abroad and seeing that a lot of people in the diaspora didn't really know history. And then marrying the world of music, tech, and storytelling. The best way to do that was to appeal to the younger market. And the best way to connect to them, I thought, was animation at the time. There came the birth of Creel. With Kemet Automotive, I worked with JLR after university. And I always wanted to bring these skills back to Africa. I mean, we're in sustainable energy today. JLR is Jaguar Land Rover, ladies and gentlemen. And wanted to bring these skills back to the continent, build us up, have us at least start to pioneer the era of mobility. So Kemet was born. Kemet is an electric vehicle company that's made by Africans for Africans, with a global market appeal.
Both of you have like multifaceted roles, and I want to kind of see where the cross parallels are, because I don't think it's easy. And I think a lot of the time now, and I say this a lot, that social media kind of just shows the highlights. It shows the easy side of the journey, and we all work together very closely simultaneously. So I'm going to push it back to you, Ronnie. What are some of the most pivotal moments in your career? But also, how did you pivot from your initial job that you were doing into now becoming into the job that you have? Because a lot of people don't know that I actually have a forensic science degree. So I'm a scientist at heart. But then I pivoted into creative and into fashion. And that's not to say that I couldn't do it. It was just a mindset at the time of, you still have the academic, which a lot of us have as a basis. But I feel like that creative spirit is born and you have it. I think I always say you either have it or you don't. And I think for you, you're someone that our journeys have worked quite similarly in that you pivoted for something that was quite corporate into the creative sphere. How was that journey for you?
And also, everybody here knows you and you are still an FBI agent. But yeah, no. So for me, it was Nissi and I are geeks, actually. I think we've gotten like 1B in life. So it's very like, we're super academic, and it wasn't even, it was funny. Like my parents are like, okay, girl, it wasn't literally, and it wasn't any, there was no pressure to be this great A-star student. But yeah, no. So for me, I was, I have a background in finance, master's degree in economics and strategy. My dream, I wanted to be the president of the World Bank. I wanted to be this bad bitch. And I was like, okay, I knew my path. Like, I had clarity from a very young age. I'm like, I want to work for the UN in this position for this many years, and they're going to promote me to this next position. And I had it all mapped out, and I started, and it was good. And then at some point, I remember I was at an interview at Goldman Sachs, and it was me. They pitted, it's boys club. Investment banking is boys club. So in my interview, it was me and this white guy from MIT. And I remember the guy who was interviewing us had like this pinky ring from a family heirloom frat guy. And he's like, yeah, so tell me what 5,580 something USD in yen is at the rate 2 hours ago. I said, huh? And then the guy from MIT was going in. He was going in. And then obviously I was trying to calculate, write it down. And then he was looking. It was just very, it felt very underhanded and very like, you know, you're making fun of me at this point. So after that, I quit. I was like, you know what? I'm moving back to Nigeria. Got a job with the AFDB, which is under the UN. At this point, my mom was planning a tour by herself. It's like this middle-aged lady from Africa going to America on a tour that there was no Live Nation. Live Nation said, I'm not giving you any money. We can't insure any of these shows because we don't know what you're going to do. So she planned it by herself. She insured it with her savings. She insured the tour in America with her bank account. And so they went. They rented a tour bus, got the band members, and they went on the road. And I remember her calling me to be like, I know you said you were going to take 3 months off work. I just need you to help me out. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll do your emails or whatever. So she calls me one day and she's like, your ticket is in your email. You need to leave the house in 30 minutes. I'm like, anyway, so I packed my bags, went to America. So this is me coming fresh out of NYSC. I was working in corporate banking. I'm sitting in this office in LA with a tax accountant, and I'm trying to negotiate why this African needs to tour and you shouldn't take 50% or whatever the tax was at the time. So that was literally my first 3 hours on the job. I had to figure that out. And then I ended up joining them on the tour bus, and the rest is history. But I think for me, my motivation is, I don't know who Goldman is. I don't know who Sachs is. I don't know who runs the UN. I don't know where the money goes. And I'm like, this is my family. And I felt like if I wasn't there, it would fall apart. And I felt like I had the right skill set. And fortunately for me, I think going back to our childhood and stuff, my mom was doing this because my brother asked her to do it for him. But I think she had a big dream, but she couldn't execute it to the capacity she wanted, because her strong suit is she's a trader. Her business till today, our only fights are about the fact that my department is to spend money. Her department is to keep money. So that was the main thing. So she created a space for me to build the company the way I wanted it, and like build the brand the way I saw that I wanted it. And that's kind of where we are now. And I feel like every single skill that I learned in school, I've somehow used over the course of. So it's creative, it's cool, but there's elements of it that are so important. With like, you never know when you're gonna have to sit with a tax accountant. You never know when you have to sit down and discuss current affairs just for shits and giggles because you need to cut a deal. You need the check. So there's so many things that I've learned, and I wouldn't trade that background and that transition. But I think for the most part, I did it because I felt like that was what I was called to do.
I love that you said that, because I always say, as creative, sometimes we have the space to create, but we don't want to think about the background. And I always say the two most important people in your team are your lawyer and your accountant. They're the things that make things work. They're the things that make sure, one, you're not getting scammed, and two, that the money is balancing. The balance is balancing, right? And I think sometimes as a creative, you kind of get caught up just doing your creativity, and you almost forget that actually what you're doing is a business. So business first. Creativity almost comes second, but not to say that, but to say that in a sense of just that having the implementation there to know that you need those infrastructures within your business setup, having the right team. And that brings me on to Unicy, and that having those two parallel worlds, how is your team set up, and how do you almost function in kind of spearheading two businesses moving simultaneously at the same time?
It's a madhouse. So there's two separate teams for each business, and they operate almost exclusively to what they're doing. The only person who swivels between the worlds are the assistants, because they have to control my calendar and sometimes they have to act as TMs. Having a great team, I can never overstate the importance, because they make your life so much easier, even down to how you feel about yourself, which factors into your execution. So I think with Kemet and with Creel, I've been very particular about having the right people on board. Also in learning yourself too, you can't do everything. And in as much as you think you have the expertise, sometimes it's important to delegate to people who have better skills than you. And you want that in your team. You want people who are better than you, who can uplift and raise the company to higher heights than you thought it could go. So yeah, that's the key thing for me.
Missy, I'd like to speak a little bit more on like what inspires your storytelling, because I've almost seen it in live action, but seeing how you apply storytelling in different various projects when you guys, if it's like designing a bottle, or sometimes your world crosses into spaceship world, which we'll get into in a little bit. But what kind of inspires your storytelling?
It's a combination of wanting to make crazy shit, which is what Three Musketeers, our product design company, does. And also wanting to tell stories as authentically as possible to reflect African culture. For me, those are the two main drivers, and do that with excellence at the forefront. With Creel, for instance, I would say I watched a lot of cartoons growing up, annoyingly so. Like, I would draw Spider-Man comics on notebooks, which is down to my own seriousness in school. But I wanted to create that because I grew up watching Powerpuff Girls, and I'm like, they look nothing like me. But we're all shouting, Blossom, Bubbles. And we're like, yeah, they're not black though. I think the first black character I saw was Codename Kids Next Door. And I'm like, we need more. So it was really important for me to try to create that more. And also looking at Tesla, looking at all these massive car companies, like, why does no African company have a car manufacturer? But like, you know, why can't we do it? So that's the driver for my storytelling and my businesses is, why not us?
A few of you kind of operate in industries where trends evolve repeatedly. Me and Ronnie are always crying on the phone at night about how fast things are moving. How do both of you kind of stay ahead of the curve and continue to feel like you're creative and being innovative in a space that's constantly moving so fast?
I haven't figured it out yet, is the truth. I think that the most difficult thing for me is being still. And I know I say a lot to people I know, I'm like, I want to be still. I want to think. I think it was Steve Jobs that said this. Being creative, you need to give yourself time to do nothing. And just that act of doing nothing. I feel like, I don't know if it's a Nigerian thing. We're just always trying to, why? And I think I'm learning, well, 2024, teaching myself how to be still, just because it allows you to think. I mean, I had to transition from Love Damini tour, and it was a completely different creative. It was a circus, and it was... I had 4 weeks to transition from that to I Told Them, which is a completely different creative about New York in the 90s and the 80s. And I didn't even have enough like brain capacity to think about what I wanted the album cover to look like. Because the way it works is he sees the album cover the same time you guys see the album cover. The last time I went to him to be like, okay, let's talk about the cover. Why do you have a job? Why are you here? I've delivered the songs, you know? So I think just doing that and not allowing that moment of stillness, and it's really hard. And I think when people think about creatives, whatever industry is, it's actually a lot of brain power. And I know for some people, it sounds like it's fluffy, but coming up with ideas and fueling yourself and recharging is so important. And I think I'm learning. And sometimes I do it. I just sit and lock the door and I sit in the bathroom by myself just to think in the dark. I'm from a house where everybody is in everybody's business. If you buy new shoes, oh, My grandma from Festac is calling me, hey, your shoe. So it's important to find time, even if it's going to your car for 5 minutes. So just sitting there and thinking, I think it changes the game. So
Missy, how about you?
I think it's also challenging ourselves. It's also being able to come up with the craziest ideas and sit down and think, how do we get this done? That's something that we really do a lot and causes a lot of fights, I think, in our relationships. But it's, if we want to bring down the moon, how do we get it done? Nothing is ever impossible. So I would say that's a key thing for us.
I'm going to get into a little bit more about specific campaigns. And I'd love for you guys to share a project or something that you're really proud of. One, a good thing, a positive, and maybe a lesson. I always say, like, there's never a negative, because out of a negative, there's always a lesson learned, right? So I would love for you guys to share, like, maybe like one of your projects that have really impacted you personally, and then maybe a lesson that you have learned along the way. I could start. One of my most favorite projects, I think, was the Burberry Burner campaign. And it was important because I felt, one, at that time, we know the journey behind the scenes. A lot of people don't see the struggles that we go through on the calls, like all white Zooms. You basically, our job is almost like sales people of the culture. Like, how do we sell the culture to you to invest in us? And I felt like we actually worked with a team for once that kind of got it, that kind of were just like, what do you want to do? How do we leverage? This is, we don't have the answers here, basically, but how do we make this sick? You know, and we were like, we want to wrap Terminal 5 at Heathrow Airport. And they were like, okay, you know, but also for us, it was just like this talk happening in Detty December and understanding like the methodology behind it and how many people are really going to come through that airport at that time and see this amazing campaign and just be like, wow, like this is where our people are. This is what we're doing. And knowing like, okay, how do we really put Africa on the map? So I think for me, that was one of the biggest milestones of what we've achieved together. I think one of the lessons learned for me is celebrating the small wins. I think sometimes on Instagram, people put in fire emoji, hands in the air. Yes, it's kill them, finish them. But actually, you just move the goalposts and push to the next thing. Okay, yeah, next week I'm going to be doing this. It's like, you don't even take time to look back to see like, wow, like, I really did that, you know, or I really accomplished that. You're just kind of like, okay, what's next? Oh, next team call, guys. Oh, so we're traveling here. It's like constantly everything's moving. And I feel like even just Coachella this year, and just seeing the amount of people word for word that are not from the diaspora that are singing Burner Boy songs, like looking at 70,000, 80,000 people word for word, like singing. I don't even want to say it's Afrobeats because I think it's global music. We're going to be honest, but just seeing how far global music has come, but knowing the struggles of having those conversations. So I think for me, it's just like celebrating the small wins, but also those two moments this year have been really special.
I think I would, and I'm about to get really geeky, sorry. I would say the creation of our prototype vehicle. This is really sciencey, and they're all creative people in here. But that was a big challenge. We were working with people from Kazakhstan, who I knew since uni days, and getting the project done, talking about specifications, speaking two different languages. I had to learn a bit of Russian, which was daunting for me. Trying to reinforce your chassis is basically the underbody of your car, right? That goes on the road and stops your car from falling apart. Understanding that African terrain is different from the rest of the world. So if I'm making a car for Africa, this chassis has to be strong. So how do we create something that's times two the strength of everything else on the market, which was tough, but we got it done. And then dealing with the politics after, the guy wanted to market it as his own product. We had to fight and, you know, and ship the car. It was long, but just having the mindset that just get it over the line. That's it. That was a big win for me in getting it ready and getting it done. The lesson learned is nothing is too big to achieve. Is my biggest lesson, because how did we create a prototype in 6 months of a fully functional car out of Kazakhstan? Two African, one female, one male. How? It's possible. You can do it. That's the thing. That's my lesson.
I think the UK number one was a big win for me. I think because for each project we go in, and this is like my main thing, I like to, this is the mathematics side taking over creative. And I, this is where I argue with my team a lot. 1 + 1 has to be 2 for me. Absolutely. Because I'm like, I'm an accountant at heart. I need my balance sheet to balance. So we go into every project with, what's your goal for the project? What do you want to achieve? And I think the main, we started this with African Giant. And with African Giant, it was, we want to cross over. We want to appeal to da-da-da, but you're just going to be yourself. So going into recording, he went into recording like, I'm just going to do music that I like. And that's kind of where we went with it. And it did what he needed to do. And achieving it was a big win for us. And then we went to Twice as Tall. And Twice as Tall was made in COVID. And I think that album, he made it and he said, I want to win a Grammy. That was why he made it, you know? So I think doing that and then everything else around it, from the single choice to the second single, everything revolved around that specific goal. Every other achievement was secondary to us, right? So we achieved that. And then the next album we had, it was the goal for that album is, I want to make an album that people are going to chant songs in a stadium. That was the goal. And so everything we did around it was that. And for this album, it was, I want a UK number one. And that was how, that's how we went into it. And from when he submitted the album till the day it was released, it was like, what are we doing? All the strategy meetings revolved around, he has to be in the UK. He has to, it was very intentional. Everything we do is extremely intentional. And it takes months of talking. So yeah, we got the number one. And I think he was in disbelief because he's one of those people that, if anyone has ever heard him speak in an interview, his most famous line is, yeah, you know, I hope for the best, prepare for the worst. You know, so you get me. So I think that mentality is kind of what he had. So even when we're like the week of, it's like, you're going to get it. He's like, nah, don't tell me I'm going to get it because you don't know. So just getting it alone, it was a sigh of relief for us because I think last year we were number 2 and this year it was kind of like, he kept saying the whole process of making the album, I'm not a number 2 guy. It's like he couldn't mentally think of himself as a number 2 position. It was making him sick physically. So I think a lot of the work that we did and all the sleepless nights revolved around just helping him achieve that goal. So that was a big win for me, a big lesson. I would say is teams. Right now our team is about 65 people in and out because we're a touring team, just dealing with people. And when you have so many people under you, I can be very 1 + 1. I'm very objective. Facts. Give me numbers. Give me I can be creative, but that's my base. And I think I've learned a lot that emotions make work better or worse. And when people feel good, they perform well. If they don't feel good, they don't perform well. So I think a hard lesson for me to learn was, if you want people to perform at an optimal level, you need to make them feel like they can perform at an optimal level. So from the way you speak to them, the way you hug them every time you see them, the way you say, you're doing amazing, sweetie. You know, have you eaten? Okay, you guys, make sure my team has AC. Don't talk to my staff like that. You know, like people want to feel like they're important all around. And I never thought that was important. Like just in general, I thought everyone would be okay. We're all here to make money, but it doesn't work that way. And it was a very difficult thing for me because my default isn't emotional. I don't express emotion very well.
Do you know what? That's so interesting to me because I've recently just done this thing called DISC training, and it's about how people receive information and how people receive feelings based on what you deliver. So there's like, obviously for me, I was direct and anyone that knows me knows that I was definitely in that corner of the pie. But then there's some people who are like emotionally involved or some people who are more strategy, and it's just like, the opposite sides of the pie work really well together. And I always kind of used to go into things thinking, why can't people just think the way that I think? Why can't things just be done the way I need them to be done? But actually, it's about knowing what that person's skill set is and navigating that person's skill set to get the best out of them. And I'll be honest with you, I only really learned that this year. Like some people do take time to think about their answers. Well, I'll just be like, white is white, black is black, in the middle is gray. Some people might be like, oh, I need a minute to think about what that's gonna be. And I'm just be like, but why can't you just say it's black? Why can't you just say it's white? But actually now I'm just like, okay, that person needs a minute, and just giving them that grace to be able to think the way that they need to think and perform what they need to perform, you know? But I never really realized that before. It was almost just like, okay, if I think this way, I'm expecting everybody to give an answer, to respond to my messages in like 0.5 seconds. Why does it take you half a day to respond back to me? You know, or emails, just firing off emails. And now I'm a bit more like, okay, think about it. Pause. What's the most appropriate response for this person that I'm not the situation, but the actual person that I'm dealing with? What's the best response for them? How are they going to receive this information? And how do I get the most out of that person? You know, so that was another lesson that I learned this year. I think, Nissi, I wanted to come back to you because I find your world so mesmerizing, but also so innovative at the same time. And one of the things I wanted to ask you is, how do you find a balance? Because I think when a lot of people are managing multiple revenue streams or looking at different businesses of setting up, one of the biggest things is time and managing your time. How do you still find time for the thing to be a creative, to also be an artist, to make music, to find passion and time for the things that you love, as well as running all of these businesses?
Well, my biggest sacrifice has been social life and sleep, if I'm being honest. Over the past decade of my life, I think my social levels are very low because I don't have time for it. And if I'm out, I'm thinking I could be working. But having good teams is a big way that I balance, and having knuckleheads around me that tell me, you have no excuse. In this family, excellence is the only way. You must find a way to make it work. They're not sympathetic at all. If you're looking for sympathy, my family is not where you go for sympathy. And I think that just helps shape my mindset. I've never really thought about it like that. I never thought about it as daunting. I've always thought about it as, this is just the way life is going to be for me. And I have to figure out how to deal with it. But I would say the key thing is teams. Is having people around you that help you find the balance and not lose your mind, and can actually do the things that you can't always be there to do.
Ronnie, I'm going to come back to you because I want us to talk a little bit more on the strategy side, because I feel like people sometimes don't really understand like what it is, what a strategy is, or how we build it out together. And I think we've touched a little bit on the Burberry partnership, but I think there was like some key pinnacle points of working with Burberry and why we chose to work with them. We obviously did the Fashion Awards, we did Met Gala, and we did a campaign. I'd love us to kind of you to elaborate a little bit more on the custom designs and a little bit more on the work that went into it. Because obviously everyone sees the accolades on social media and they see when we post the looks, but not necessarily the 4 months journey before of, you know, LA, London, New York, all the meetings, all the time that goes into it.
Starting with Burberry, I mean, obviously, I think that was kind of like the first big thing we did together. And all that Terminal 5 stuff she said was all her idea. I just piggybacked off of it. And I think the good thing for me is our team is so women-led. And a lot of people don't know this, but we're 90% female. And I think even with Berna, I feel like he loves it. It's like women are like lions. So when someone is trying to, he's like, my team, call my team. And it's like five women on the call, like, ah, you can't do that. He can't do that. Do you have his hot towels? His face towels need to be black. 400 mg Egyptian cotton. But yeah, so I think, you know, with everything that we do is kind of, like I was saying earlier, it's super intentional and it takes so long. And I think just working with you, and this is now like a friend, give your friend her flowers moment. I think, you know, a lot of the time, and Grace and I were just talking about this earlier, how we come off as the help a lot of the time. And I think it was a moment for me to be like, actually, this is easy. Like, I thought I had to be everything everywhere and touch everybody and be everything. And I think just with Irene kind of coming, stepping into our team, it just made me take an exhale. Because even though it's your friend, it's like, there's my friend, I don't know about that. But just the fact that I didn't have to always think about everything was the best part of my year. And then I'll just, let's relax. And just like knowing that, I'll be like, okay, Irene, I want to do this thing in Toronto. And I know it's 2 weeks away, but can we find money? And she's like, Ronnie, you know, it's last minute. You can't do this. So do. And she still finds it. So it's one of those things where it just helps out knowing that you have the right people around you, and it's not easy for us at all. So there was that. And then just in planning it out, and even with Burberry, because that campaign was Ricardo's last campaign. So just kind of like figuring out and sitting down and being like, okay, we're going to do this ad. What next? How can Burberry help us? They're not going to be able to give Burna Boy another check. That will bankrupt the company. So what next? So we started thinking about what that looks like. And then Met Gala came into play. And I remember the day after Met Gala, I called Irene and I burst into tears hysterically. And I haven't cried in 5 years. Coming from Port Harcourt to the south side of Nigeria and going to all these places we've been to, I think I expected so much. And I think what I learned was the human element in everything. And learning to manage your expectations as a person. Because even just like his experience, he doesn't enjoy fashion. He loves fashion, but he doesn't like dealing with fashion as an industry. So that it was a lot of convincing. The morning of the Met, for goodness sake, he said he's not going. We landed in New York. I said, why are we here? I said, huh? And it's like, well, I have a zit on my forehead. I'm not going. Did we not almost kill ourselves? And it was just one of those things, going through all of that, making sure he was fine and he felt good about himself. Because, and back to grace and giving people grace, you have to think about it like, oh, in someone's mind, they're like, you're invited to the Met. Why are you complaining? But then on the flip side, you know, the other side of it is he's standing in front of 500 cameras. And deep down, you're unsure of yourself and all you're thinking about is this big zit on your forehead. And as a woman, I would die if I had to do that. So I get it. And I had to put myself in that position, find a solution and all of that stuff. So I think just the process of going through everything with all the people we've dealt with, there's this element of we need to do this thing because this is where we're trying to go, as opposed to doing something just for doing sake. And figuring out where the wider conversation is in every conversation you have. We're in a space where everything is so surface, and those moments where you can be real with somebody and have a deeper conversation and build something, they rarely ever happen. So when I sense something like that, I try to go deep with it. So, and that's fortunately what's happened with all our brand deals, from Burberry to Met Gala to, you know, all the other stuff that we're working on. So yeah, I don't know if I've answered your question. God is good.
All the time. No, you did answer the question. I think also I would add to that in that, like, when we first had a conversation, we had a common goal. We were just like, what do we want to achieve? And what are the steps for us to get there? And I think you can kind of make allowances for all the sacrifices on the way because there's a common goal. And we were like, we want to do this in luxury fashion. We want to achieve this. We want to be in this press. We want to get this media. Like, everything was really thought out. And I think that was part of our plan. So I think when Met Gala did happen, there was a bit of a come down effect afterwards. And I'm finding that more and more now. I don't know if you guys are, but I feel like the bigger the stage, the more that, like you said, you realize that there's just a human element to it. It's just people that you're dealing with at the end of the day, no matter where you are globally. And everybody has insecurities and nobody knows what they're doing. Everyone is just figuring it out on their way. And sometimes you come into this with such high expectations of people and then you're disappointed when it's just like, them two, they're just, yeah, figuring it out themselves. They don't know. So they're just giving you the best that they can. And I've realized that actually when you just live for the moment, when you just enjoy being present, that's when you really can really take it to the next level. And I remember looking back after Met Gala and being like, wow, like, we really did that though. we really did that. Like, we really, like, even his outfit and the train and like everything, we really did that. And like, just accepting, okay, wow, it might not have gone the way we thought it was going to go, but actually we are here and people are looking to us for the next generation to come. If you look at the new season of certain brand campaigns and the demographic that they're going to, they're coming to the continent now. We're giving the next generation the opportunity. And sometimes I almost feel like I say this a lot, in that it takes one to be the sacrificial lamb for everybody else to benefit. But ultimately, you know, it's for the greater future and it's for the gain of others. And I think what we've been able to build and working with you guys, and going back to what you were saying about being, you're the only team in music that I've worked with, I would say, in the last 18 years that is very female focused. The only one. And that's why I wanted this talk to happen. And that's why this was so important for me, because I wanted the world to be able to see how it is for me on a day to day working with girls that I can just call and be like, anyway, we're going to gist for the first 15 minutes. And then we're going to be like, okay, on the agenda of this call first, second and third. But we might start with gist. But equally, it was important for me to show. And I know, like, I would have loved for Auntie Bosse to be here today, but I feel like she really spearheads that. She really champions us to be like the women that we are. She's really the first person to be like, okay, who messed with you? How much should it be? Okay, I'm going to be the person that's leading the camp. Like, she's really doing that. She's really being like, you need to put a couple more zeros on that check. And every promoter is going to be crying and they're not going to like it. But guess what? They pay. They're going to pay. And she's really taught me that you have to know what you want, and you have to be firm with it. And it's okay to walk away. She will really be like, okay, we're not coming. Okay, we're not doing it. It will get to the line. Even me, I'm like, can we just get this over the line? And it'll be like, no, because actually this is our worth. This is where we should be. And the jet on the rider, we'll discuss. That's a whole nother podcast. But the jet on the rider is very serious, because most brands will say no. Most brands will say, sorry, we don't do private travel. And you're just like, well, if you want this artist, guess what, guys? You're going to have to kind of do private travel. And guess what, guys? They kind of do private travel, because we're really flying up and down. So for me, why I always give Auntie Bosse her flowers is because she's always set the precedent, and she won't falter. She won't take the commercial flight and say, you know what, we're going to waver on this one. Let's just do it and see what happens. This is our standards and this is what it is. If you can't meet us at the junction that we're at, then it's not happening. So just to close out, I have some fire questions for you guys. Your favorite city in the world, go.
I'm not going to lie, it's Lagos, you know. I think for now it's Paris.
Ronnie Lagos, Nissi Paris. Your favorite food to eat, Nissi, go.
Yum, fried yum.
Some village people. Ronnie.
Ofada, rice and stew.
Village girls. With all this international travel, I thought you were going to give us seafood, linguine, caviar. What do you do to relax in your spare time?
Eat popcorn and watch a movie.
What do you do in your spare time, Ronnie?
Listen to jazz.
And to the two of you, to kind of close out, what is the best piece of advice you've ever been given, and by whom?
Be yourself, by my mother.
Short and sweet, Ronnie?
It's similar. My grandpa said, fuck everyone. I remember there was a time he used to drive us to boarding school. And there was a time where, and this is like, at that time he was maybe 60. And he'd be driving in his V-boo, all his three grandchildren from Festac to Ogun State. And somebody tried to cut in front of him, and it was like, you literally made me almost have an accident with all my grandchildren in the car. He came out of the car. I'm a bastard. I'm a fucking bastard. I said, 65. So when he got back into the car, he was like, see, you guys, fuck everybody. Like, whatever you do in life, fuck everyone and just do what you want to do. Because at the end of the day, nobody cares if all my grandkids are in the back seat. They will run me over. So, and I think that stuck with me. And I think it's also part of what mommy told you as well. And just live your life. No matter what, don't let people's opinions affect what you do. If they like you, they'll be okay. If not, we push. Look at us, we're hermits. We're supposed to be outside. We're always inside doing God knows what. According to my mom, n'importe quoi. That's what it's called in French. So, yeah.
And before we go, what's next? What's next for you guys from a spaceship standpoint?
Coins. We're all tired of swiping our own bank cards. Hallelujah. Amen. Hallelujah. Amen. But yeah, no, I mean, what's next is just like building. I think for us, it's finding time. Balance is what I think as a team, as a family, we lack. Balance. We haven't figured that out yet. And I think, you know, we are leaning on each other to kind of figure out what that looks like for us for next year and what it means to have a life outside of this drive that we were born with and this quest to change the world and this Pan-African. I remember my mom always says that when she was six, my grandpa asked her to define apartheid. And those are the things like super Pan-African and very, it's either we're that or we're just killing ourselves working. We want to change this one. And sometimes in life, it's just like, just balance it out. Learn to be softer. Learn to be sweeter. Learn to kind of like care about yourself as opposed to the future and the world all the time. Sometimes it's okay to be selfish for 5 minutes. Yeah.
Okay, guys. So before we kind of round up, I'm going to put it out to the audience and take some questions.
All three of you center your life around work. And I've spoken to Irene about this. How do you get out of that space and actually start centering it around your life and whatever life aspirations you have, including love, including whatever? What does that look like?
I'm very stiff because I'm still finding the balance. But in all honesty, do you know what has really worked for me this year is actually making my work fun. So I'm intertwined. So as much as I'm here doing this, well, I'm actually not here to do this, but I'm here for work. But now I get to do this and add the enjoyment. I always say minister of enjoyment, right? As a phrase of life and just like whatever situation that I'm in, trying to make the best of it and have fun. Like I like my life to feel fun. No matter where I'm going, we go through ups and downs, ins and outs, but you know, we're still turning up. We're still having fun with it. And I think for me, it's been hard finding a balance. I'll be honest. My partner is very opposite to me. He's very chill. Doesn't like to be outside. He's not on social media. He's given in bed at 9 p.m. He's given babes, knock yourself out. Have a good time. Thumbs up. I'm with you. He's bringing me cups of tea in the morning. How's your headache? Do you need paracetamol? All of that good stuff. But I think it works because we're so opposite. But a big lesson for me this year is actually just also investing the same way that I would invest in a creative deck and bringing a project to life. I've also got to put that same investment into the personal side of my life. So making that creative deck for my love life and where I want us to go, but also what, you know, assets do I want to have and what else do I want to build outside of this, but also putting the time into that the way that I would with my work. You almost second guess it and be like, oh, I'll just think about this and not jot down or not hard pitch the way you would for a job. So for me, I'm hard pitching in 2024 for my love life. I'm hard pitching for my social life. I'm hard pitching in friendships. I'm hard pitching in my family. All the things that also make that I make the time for in work that I need to do in my personal life. So that's my answer to that.
Side eyeing you, Sha. I'm going to hold you to that. Do you know what? Antoli, you know the vibes. I feel like I said earlier, I think learning to be softer and not just for swiping card's sake. I think just for like posterity measures almost. I think I've gone through life so much, like if it's the quest not to ever get a B or the quest to get a first class degree or the quest to get a distinction or the quest to... There's always a quest. And I think just being comfortable with the fact that all these things will always exist. There's always going to be a new challenge. But what do you want as a person? And what do you... And I had to... Someone asked me last week, what are your hobbies? And for the life of me, I couldn't remember. I physically don't remember what I used to do before this, which is really sad. And I think that was quite hurtful when that happened. And it just made me think that, you know, just in like going through life and wanting to be in control all the time, even with dealing with guys and dating, I have to be in control of it. That was like my thing, right? I say when the date is, I say where we're going. I say when we leave, I have my wallet on the table. I'm like, my car is outside. But then you ask yourself, for what? That is gross, actually. That is actually appalling. And the whole of like the towards the last quarter of this year, I think I'm now leaning more into that, like, I don't even know how to fill a form. Oh my God. I'm so hot. I don't have a car. What is Uber? Is that an app? You know, so just like I'm throwing myself into the deep end because that's the only way I'm going to change. And I think that's the future because it's cool to be a boss from 9 to 5, but put on your mini skirt because we can't come and perish. Dying is not why the Lord died for us. Okay. The Lord said you must be soft. So that is it. And I'm learning it the hard way because I'll look around at girls. I'm like, does she have two heads? Why is she flued out? Girl, we're doing too much. That's the truth. We're doing too much. And sometimes it's okay to chill. Nobody's fighting you. And this is me telling myself, nobody's dragging it with you. Yes, you're a boss. Cool. Ugh. You know, so yeah, that's it for me.
Nisi, we're coming for you.
Give me a year. Let me catch up to you guys. I'll look up to them for the tricks in how to balance, but I can't lie. It's not going to happen for me. 2024 is not my year. 2025, we're coming. I still need to raise a couple million. So after that year, but I think I agree with what they're saying. And I see, I'm not as stiff as Ronnie and Irene. I never have been. I probably never will be. So I'm the last born. So soft life is what I know. If I don't have eggs, Ronnie and Damni, they will provide. Till my last day, they will continue to provide.
So obviously you had a journey through everything you're going through. What would be one piece of advice that you could give yourself if you could go back in time that would help you today?
In short, I have two. And it kind of repeats what we've already said. Know the business, because I wish I had understood the business of fashion more at the time and scaled when I needed to scale. I didn't. But then everything happens for a reason, because those doors opened other doors and I'm here now. But knowing the business would have helped the financial element of TTYA a little bit more at that time. One. But two is celebrating the wins, because for me, the goalpost just moves. Like, okay, now I said to Ronnie at the beginning of this year, okay, we've done Met Gala, we've done this. What's next? And we're really scratching our head because there's not many accolades that are left. So if we're searching for the accolades, where are we going to find the happiness, or when are we going to be happy? So I think for us, it was just, we switched it to like less about the accolades and just doing things that no one else is really doing and having fun with it. So I think it's just enjoying that journey of celebrating it. And I think that's my two for me.
From me, it would be just reinforcing the fact that you make plans and God laughs. I spent a lot of my younger years, I tell people all the time, my uni was miserable. I spent it in the library. I was like, I need a first class. And I got it and I'm like, okay. And it's neither here nor there. Well, I didn't enjoy uni. I didn't, because in my mind, I thought that this is my, because like I said before, I had clarity from a very young age. I was very sure what I wanted for myself. I even knew the type of man I wanted to be with. I knew what he looked like. I thought I was so smart. And I think just like, relax. I think in general, there's an element of wisdom that comes from peace and just like calming down, which I missed out on when I was younger. So that's the advice I would give myself.
I'm the chief of short quotes. Stay dynamic is what she was trying to say. And that'll be my thing. Just stay dynamic.
I want to ask everyone a question as individuals though. So, Nisi, you're doing the car thing, which is super dope. When do you project on that to actually launch and actually start happening? Also, Ronnie, are you planning on making like an actual strategy company for what you do and see if you could do it with many other people? And Queen TTYA, your one is not a question. Just keep doing what you're doing because you're actually a queen at what you do. And I'm blessed to know you. So big up yourself.
So we launch the prototype in January, Côte d'Ivoire first. But then Nigeria is trying to figure something out. So we'll work it out. And then first batch of cars on the road will be 2025 Q4. And then 2027, everybody can order.
She needs to raise 2 million. So if you're interested in investing, give us a call.
Oh, it's 50 million.
You're a big girl. I literally, when you said that, I turned to Irina. I said, did you have a conversation with him? Because that's what she tells me every quarter. And I think, yeah, that's the plan for 2024. Like I was saying earlier, I think balance is what we didn't have. And I think the ability, because I don't think anyone else has a source like me, if that makes sense. So I feel like each of us feel that way in our individual lives. There's some certain things that you feel like I'm the only one that has this source, right? So I wanted to get to a place where I felt comfortable enough. And like Grace and I were talking about earlier, ego aside, fear aside, being able to hire people that are better than you and people that can do the work the same as you. You're still the owner. You're still the conductor. But doing that, I think that's kind of where I'm at now and getting to next year. And I think for sure it's coming. So give me a call.
Hi, I have 3 questions. They're quite short and they're really specific. What's really amazing about this discussion is women. And I know we ignore it. I was one of the people that ignored that as well. But the value of women in the team. And I often say that women do not rally together in the same way that men do. So us starting this today is really important for people that are seeing it. It's really, really important. My first one for Ronamy was, sometimes we talk about strategy and I'm one of the people that didn't really expose the strategy of what we did to the public. So it makes everything look so easy. But from your last project, which I really loved, was the magazine element and like the levels of like, what that strategy was to make sure you secured that number one. So if you could just top line so that people don't think it just comes from nowhere, that there was a lot of thinking behind that and it was really intentional. If you could just fast track us on what that strategy looked like. My second question is for Irene, and we talk about it a lot. And I think that I'm going to say something controversial because I'm friends with everyone, but arguably you work with the biggest African artists in the world, arguably. Because of everything, like no one gets paid more than Burna Boy. Facts. Do you know what I mean? It's a fact and it's really important. Do you know what I love about Nigerians is know our worth. So Auntie Bosse, thank you for showing us we know our worth. They will pay or they will not. And it's okay. Let's do less for more. Okay. Because he is arguably the best artist in the world from this continent. You know, he, for all of his flaws, you're his siblings, but from front facing, he's amazing. When you're working with arguably the best artist in the world, in a continent that is growth potential is so high. I think by 2050, when my son will be 28 or something, this will be the third biggest country in the world, or economically, population wise, everything. So what can we do to bring some of that money to Africa? So my son can have a job here. Irene, like, how can we start thinking, like, know your worth, you know, bring it to Africa, say, you know, hold out. What advice can you give? And Nissi, I'm in awe of you. Do you know why you are amazing? You have your story and you're sticking to it. You know, you are a brilliant mind. You're a genius, you know, and it's really hard to navigate in that space of popular culture when you have to be popular. So you have to think about TikTok and the trends and all of that. But your consistency between your vision of yourself is so inspirational. So what would you say were the 3 things that you refer back to ground yourself in that thinking? Because you don't get sidetracked. And I know I will tell you as a fact, as someone that understands culture, it will catch up. Don't worry. Stay consistent. It will catch up. But what are the 3 things you can tell those kind of outsiders, those kind of people that are not, you know, leaning into just what's popular and what the trend is to stay consistent in their vision? So those are my 3 questions. I hope you understand them clearly.
In the brand spaces, there's 2 things that I'm noticing, and this is on the corporate side. First one is, so right now I'm seeing that a lot of money has been invested in Latinx, which is disappointing to me because also equally our growth rate, like you said, our reach, our insights, our cultural currency, as I like to put it, is significantly higher. But it's disappointing to me, if I'm going to be honest, that race does play a part on it, because I see the investment that's there in Latinx, everything at the moment from a corporate perspective, from the biggest brand in the world, their marketing strategy is Latin America. Latin America. I think it's important to know that the data cannot be denied. And I think that that's one thing that's really important. There's metrics now. And the data, like you said, the economic growth of the continent, one, the fact that I think by 2026, they said that 75% of the population in Nigeria is going to be under the age of 24. So if your marketing strategy is Gen Z, and these are the number of people that are here, how come those marketing budgets are not aligning with the continent? One. Two, I think it's important to believe in our own source. So understanding what we have to offer and how we utilize that in that brand space, right? So there's a lot of brands that actually do want to come to the continent, but the first thing they'll say to me is, oh, we would love to activate in Nigeria. One, we don't know how. Two, we don't actually have a standalone store there. So it's difficult for us to put marketing dollars if you can't go into X and X store and physically buy the product, right? And I think there is a new generation of stuff that's happening here. So first of all, in 2025, it's going to be the first actually live music space that's going to be built behind the Port Palm Mall, for starters, in Nigeria. And I think there's going to be investment in that area to really bring the brands. So I think, first of all, we need to understand how we navigate the brands to work in this space. First, I think second of all, like I said, the data is undeniable. So it's how we interpret that data to use it to our benefit, to be able to get the brands to spend their marketing dollars. Because everything at the end of the day comes down to cash dollars, right? So if you look at podcasting, if we look at audio, right, your reach is outweighing a lot of these American podcasts and audio, but you're not getting the same marketing budget. You're not getting the same media spend. You're not getting the same sponsorship. You're not getting the same opportunities. So I think for me, there's a short-term opportunity and there's a long-term opportunity. The short-term opportunity is utilizing the data to be able to leverage your own business. So understanding who your target audience is and how do you leverage marketing spend dollars against that target audience in the short term for now. In the long term, it's going to be looking at the economic growth of this country, unfortunately, and how we're able to leverage those brands to come here in a real authentic way and see the spend and see the power in being on the ground. So whether that's like in, and the short term needs to play into the long term. So whether it's utilizing that brand in the short term for an activation and then saying, actually, there's two parts to this contract, because people think that when they do deals is to take the immediate money and not think about the long term, right? So you can take a deal now that can benefit you in 5 years' time. So you can say, actually, in the short term, we need sponsorship for this podcast, for example, or we need sponsorship for this live event, or we need sponsorship for this concert that we want to do. But actually, I want you to commit an X amount of dollars for the next 5 years to grow this partnership to X amount. And that's where people always miss out. They take their now money and they don't think about the future money. So you can say to this X brand of, oh, yeah, work with us now, or we're going to do this hashtag ad or sponsorship. But actually, we want you to invest 4 million in the next 4 years, or 1 million a year. Half of that is fee, and the rest of that is going to be to marketing, promoting media, to building your brand awareness in this country with us that are here. Because a lot of the time, the brands are relying on external agencies that don't live here, that don't work here, to tell them what is relevant here. Whereas they should be leaning in more to the people who are here to be able to galvanize that. So that leads back to my short term, in that in the short term, we can be galvanizing. We can be setting up those companies. We can be looking at those brand opportunities to lead into the long term. So I try to keep it short and brief and top line, but I hope that was useful.
Like I said, I had 4 weeks to think about this. And it was really jarring because I was breaking down a stadium and going into, like, my vinyl deadlines were coming, my CD deadlines were coming, my product deadlines were coming. The goal is to push units, and I need to sell music products. Last year, I focused on CDs. And what I found is that people, when you're dealing with fans, and this is super fans, not even like average fans, super fans are looking at a CD and they're like, oh, this is cute, but I don't have a CD player. And I don't really, like, I have no use for a CD, really and truly. And that knocked us back a bit because I started noticing consumer behavior. And I think with any brand and with any business, it's important to create something that consumers need, because that way you can make mass money. I like to call it mass money and hashtag ad or increment money. If you can make mass money, you're in the green forever and ever. Amen. So anyway, music products, CDs weren't working for us last year. The number we sold globally was abysmal to me. And I made a mental note that I need to figure out a way to push music product, because all of the chart companies, Billboard, RIAA, all of that, they have rules. And it's like very lengthy rules on what counts as a unit. So I think for me, I was trying to think of something that people will buy as part of their everyday lifestyle that was a music product. And I was struggling to figure out how to package something and pass it off as a full-blown music product that had all the records on the album, all of that stuff, and still have it count towards sales. And so I thought of like Double XL, because the concept of the album already was super inspired by Wu-Tang. If you listen to it properly, it has all the skits of like the Shaolin Temple, very inspired by New York in the 80s, the 90s. And that was when like print publishing was at its peak. So from Double XL to the Source magazine, I remember that was like the big era of like, I remember Wu-Tang was, they were the first to have a magazine cover with no text. It was literally just their logo and no text. Like those were the glory days. And for me, I wanted to put myself in that position of how can I relate to this era that we're trying to channel, but also I want to sell units. That's my goal. And then I stuck a CD on the back of the magazine and it counted as a music product. But you won't know that unless you actually like, you're in desperate need. Those are the things, that's what I call the gray. There's a lot of grays in every industry. So for me, the magazine was cool to do for the culture, but then it just needed to be something that I could sell. So yeah, that's kind of how it came about. And then the album cover became the magazine cover. And then just started pushing activations around the idea of a news agent. And also the idea of like, I told them, being me passing a message to you the way I want to pass the message to you, also then tied into, and all of these dots connecting, it wasn't like part of my initial strategy, by the way. I just picked on something and it happened to, I started pulling, literally when you sit down and you're like, you must connect. I must connect these dots, and started pulling at threads. And everything, as God would have it, everything kind of made sense. So that's kind of how it came about. And yeah, so now the magazine is a music product. So, yeah.
And you got a number one album. Duh. Nisi?
Okay, so the question was, how do I stay focused or grounded, right? Three different reasons. One, vision. What is the vision? Always being strong-minded about what the vision is, being clear, and not wanting to deviate from what that is and what the end goal is. The second one is, and you talked about my disdain for social media. What compromise are you willing to make that will allow you to look back on yourself and still be a happy person? That's a big guiding tool for me. Do I want to be, can I consistently stay a dancer for the camera? Can I stay a joke maker? If I can't, I can't. So it's, what compromises are you willing to make? And the last one was a tough one, is a tough one for me to accept every day. I know I still argue with Ronnie from time to time about why things aren't moving faster, but faster is not always better. Especially when it comes to building something this big that has so many different connecting dots. You can't expect the same amount of speed when you have one thing that you're doing. People have to acclimatize. You have to find the parallel lines. You have to find the intersections. So it will happen in a major way, but it will not be fast. And if you did it too fast, you will lose some things along the way. So I think those are the three main things for me.
And it's all over. Thank you, guys. Thank you for coming. This has been TTYA Talks.
Can I just say, only you could get us up here. We notoriously decline speaking in public.
So on that note, guys, I want to thank you for coming for TTYA Talks. I want to thank the Tiffany Amber team for hosting us. I want to thank the Shivas family. We're doing big things next year. And again, it's really important that people pull up and show up and put their money where their mouth is, right? Because everybody talks about community and galvanizing. They've almost become like treadland words now, but it's really about the people who support you and pull up for you. And that's what this space is about. So thank you, guys. If they want to follow you and hear more, Ronnie, what's the at?
Ronami.
Ronami. And Nissi?
It's Nissi Nation.
Across all platforms. And I'm at Irene TTYA. Thanks, guys.
If you enjoy TTYA Talks, a podcast, please spread the word. Rate, review, subscribe, all of that good stuff. Any questions, also feel free to send me a signal on Instagram or Twitter on the handles at Irene TTYA and at TTYA Talks. If you enjoy TTYA Talks, a podcast, please spread the word. Rate, review, subscribe, all of that good stuff. Any questions, also feel free to send me a signal on Instagram or Twitter on the handles at Irene TTYA and at TTYA Talks.